From Schwartz Media, I'm Ruby Jones. This is 7am. Last week, 95-year-old great-grandmother Claire Noland died after allegedly being tasered by a police officer. That officer will now face court and we'll learn more about what led up to the incident and what contributed to Noland's death. But the biggest question is how the police ended up confronting an elderly person in aged care who was distressed and in need of help. Today, senior reporter for the Saturday paper, Rick Morton, on the systemic failures that surround the death of Claire Noland. It's Tuesday, May 30. So, Rick, Claire Noland died last week after being tasered by a police officer. She was a frail 95-year-old great-grandmother who was in a nursing home. So my first question is, why was a taser used on her?
Yeah, that's the big question at the moment. So this happened about 2 weeks ago now, and it was in the early hours of the morning of Wednesday, the 17th of May, around about 4 a.m. When police get a phone call from staff at Yalambi Lodge, which is an aged care home in Cooma in regional New South Wales. Now, Yalambi Lodge specialises in residents with high care needs, including dementia, and the staff apparently told police that they needed assistance because this particular resident, Claire Noland, who is 95 years old, or who was 95 years old and suffered from dementia, had grabbed a steak knife from the kitchen, and they were unable to de-escalate the situation, as they say in aged care. And so for reasons possibly due to the staff feeling unsafe, and they've called the cops. Now, police arrive there. They're unable to get Miss Noland to put the knife down. She's clearly scared and confused, which is the hallmark of people being in the middle of a dementia episode. This is not unknown information to people who work in aged care. Shouldn't be unknown information to the police, by the way. And so she continues to approach police officers, which is the original telling of it from the police themselves. But, of course, they then added she's using a walking frame. She's using a Zimmer frame and she's doing it quite slowly by their own admission. And, of course, they consider that to be a point at which they pull the trigger on a taser and deploy a taser. Now, this is allegedly deployed by a 33-year-old senior constable, Christian White. Mrs. Nolan falls backwards. She hits her head. She fractures her skull and she ends up in hospital with a brain bleed for about a week before she eventually dies from those injuries. And she died surrounded by her family. And the whole thing is unimaginable, but it really does raise some pretty significant questions about the police response for a start and then about aged care more generally.
Well, let's talk further about the police response because there's the initial incident and obviously questions around whether that taser should have been pulled, but then there's what happens after that and it takes the police quite a while to actually disclose the incident publicly and at first they actually don't mention that there was a taser involved. So tell me about how that information came to light and why it was that the police kept that under wraps initially.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question actually because I found out in the, it's only a small technical thing, but the first warning that journalists got that something had happened was actually from the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission, which is a separate body in New South Wales, which put out a media alert saying they're aware of an incident. But when at least one journalist called the New South Wales Police Media, they were told that they had no record of anything out of Cooma, which is just odd. Later that afternoon, evening, the cops did put out a statement. They mentioned that there was an interaction with police between a 95-year-old woman and police, an interaction, which is kind of a hallmark of this passive language that police officers usually use in statements where they've done something, allegedly, done something wrong. And there was no mention of the use of a taser in that first release. All they said was that an elderly woman sustained injuries during this interaction with police. By Thursday afternoon, so this is more than a day after the incident happened, the media had begun reporting that Miss Noland had been tasered, but it wasn't until 9:57 a.m. on Friday, 2 days later, that police first mentioned that fact in an official statement. 2 days. Now, Peter Cotter, the New South Wales Assistant Commissioner, gave a press conference shortly after where he gave more details.
Can you say if she was actually engaging in a threat at the time that she was tasered?
At the time she was tasered, she was approaching police. But it is fair to say at a slow pace. She had a walking frame. But she had a knife. I can't take it any further as to the what was going through anyone's mind.
And in the days since, the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb, has claimed the reason for omitting the taser was that extended members of Nolan's family hadn't been contacted yet, and police didn't want them to learn the detail about the taser from media reports. She has defended the handling of that particular matter.
Mm. Okay, and now that Claire Nolan has died, it's even more important that there is transparency around what happened and that we understand exactly what led up to the incident and, you know, if it's appropriate, if there are also consequences. So can we talk a bit here about the mechanisms for full accountability? What's likely to happen next?
Well, I guess, you know, there were some things that I guess had to happen along the way to reassure public trust. And one of those was that before we had any real answers was that the senior constable who allegedly deployed his taser was suspended with pay before being charged the next day with three different offences, including the most serious offence of the lot, reckless grievous bodily harm. Now, that charge, we're not precisely sure of the timeline, but that charge was on or around the time that Mrs. Nolan died. And Senior Constable Christian White will be in court on July 5th for the first mention of that case. Now, we've obviously got two significant levels of institutional deficiency to look into now. We've got the police force and then we've got aged care more generally as a sector. And those are now firmly kind of in play for public scrutiny. Now, on the one hand, we've got the Commissioner, Karen Webb, who hasn't been in the job all that long. I think it's about 18 months. She's kind of embarked on this quite bizarre, I think, media blitz to try and both reassure the community about what happened.
The Police Commissioner is Karen Webb and joining us now on ABC Radio Sydney. Good morning.
Good morning, Sarah.
So I understand you've been with the family.
I have. I thought it was appropriate that
But in some sense it seems like her media blitz has also been to keep the family in the tent to make sure that, you know, she's out there talking about what's happened because the family are by the bedside of Mrs. Nolan. But Karen Webb hasn't really done a great job, I don't think, of reassuring or soothing the public mind because she came under a huge amount of opprobrium for saying that she wasn't going to watch the body cam footage, which they have, of Mrs. Nolan being tased, which would show precisely what happened in that moment because she wanted to get a clearer picture of everything that happened up to, during and after. But, I mean, is there a clearer picture than vision? I don't know that there is. And also, not only did she say she wasn't going to watch it, but she said it would be courageous not to, which is just, frankly, a weird thing to say.
Well, I think you've got a duty to watch it. You're the most senior officer in New South Wales. You will make the final decision about whether this officer remains in the force. I know it's not going to be pretty, but in the end, I think it's your duty to watch it, Commissioner.
Well, that's right. In the end, I might, Ben, but I need to have it in the context of all the other statements and evidence, and I'm waiting for that to occur.
And so, of course, we do have the Law Enforcement Commission, Conduct Commission, now independently monitoring that stuff, and I suspect that will form part of their purview. It's like, has this thing been handled properly? Now, what's interesting to me is that the Police Commissioner, Karen Webb, has also admitted that she's unsure the police are the right people to be getting called into situations like this.
Are police the right people to be responding to an uncooperative or even violent person with dementia?
That's a big question and I don't have the answer immediately.
And maybe this is part of that distancing themselves from, you know, or trying to add some doubt into the mind of the public about, you know, maybe police weren't equipped to deal with this. I don't think they were. Therefore, does she think that's exculpatory? Does she think that that is ameliorating in any particular sense about the conduct of the officer involved? That'll come up in court and it is before the court, so we shouldn't prejudge too much of that.
But there is a good question there, Rick, around why police officers were brought into the aged care home in the first place. Why does a situation like that require a police presence? Can we talk a bit about that and I guess the questions that you have around aged care and their responsibility, their role in this?
Yeah, I mean, that one seems more obvious to me, having written a lot about aged care as a system over many years now, including covering the Royal Commission. They are woefully under-resourced, underfunded, understaffed, under-equipped, like in almost every potential way that you could imagine it, particularly as, so I was talking to a registered nurse, Jane Newbound, who's been in this sector for 20 years, and I asked her, I'm like, would you send someone to hospital because you can't cope with them in the nursing home? And she said, oh, absolutely. It happens all the time. Particularly when you've got poorly paid, poorly resourced staff, the personal care workers who are overworked and there's not enough of them as it is, and something happens on the shift that makes them feel for their own safety or that they're not comfortable handling because of the risk attached to it. You're dealing with people's lives. She said, yeah, you call a paramedic, you might send them to hospital. In extreme situations, you might call the police. Certainly you have to call the police if they're missing, if someone absconds, and that happens a lot with dementia patients. But if they're worried about their safety, yeah, because they're not trained for this. And Jane said it happens all the time.
We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Emily Barrett, Managing Editor of the Saturday Paper. Every week, I work with our writers on journalism that often ends up as part of the news on 7am. But there's much more to the Saturday Paper than what you hear on this show. There's commentary, arts coverage, food, fashion, science, and health. To get the most from Australia's leading independent newspaper, subscribe at thesaturdaypaper.com.au. The Saturday Paper, the whole story.
There's nowhere like the monthly. Long-form journalism that doesn't just respond to the news cycle, it shapes it. Subscribe today from just $7.25 at themonthly.com.au/subscribe. The Monthly, Australia's only news magazine.
So, Rick, we've got this situation where there are overworked staff who are calling the police because they don't necessarily have the resources to cope when something goes wrong in an aged care home that they work in. And it seems like what happened to Claire Noland really could have happened in any nursing home in the country. And I know that you've come across other families who have had similar experiences. So tell me about what you've heard.
Yeah, so I was talking to the family of Rachel Graham, who was a resident at St Basil's Randwick in Sydney, run by the Greek Orthodox Church. Now, she also had dementia. And again, another beloved grandmother who had such a beautiful life. She was a librarian, saw every theatre production in Sydney for 60 years, ends up in care because she needs some help, right? She has dementia. And dementia manifests with difficult behaviours, as they call them, where people need behavioural interventions. And in Rachel's case, she was wandering, she was hollering, calling out, which is very common, and the staff couldn't deal with her. Now, the staff were in a dedicated dementia wing of St Basil's, and three times that year in 2020, Rachel Graham was sent to the local private hospital for no reason other than the fact that she had dementia. In fact, the hospital told her daughter, Emma Graham, look, she's got dementia. There's nothing wrong with her. And then they'd kept her in overnight and they sent her back. This is happening in aged care homes all across the country where staff are at their wit's end or they're not properly equipped, and so they send them to hospital or they call outside authorities to do what, you know, they either can't do or aren't willing to do. Sometimes there are management edicts that say, you know, to save money or to save time, just shunt them off to hospital. And that's what happened to Rachel. And then in October of 2020, they called the police because there are, again, a dedicated dementia wing. No one there had been given any dementia training. They called the police. The police put two sets of handcuffs on Rachel Graham.
Why? That's rubbish.
Because we don't want to have to hold you.
You don't have to hold me. We do.
Again, there's body cam footage, which we only have as a public to be able to view it. We only have it because Emma Graham lodged essentially a Freedom of Information. It's a GIPA request in New South Wales to get that footage because the nursing home claimed, weirdly, that their CCTV footage of the entire incident cut out when the police arrived and only kicks back in when Mrs. Graham was being loaded into an ambulance without any police in the frame and no handcuffs on. So they claimed that they couldn't find any evidence of this ever happening. The body cam footage shows very clearly the whole thing.
Why? What are you wearing that?
Just keep it still.
And Mrs. Graham is in acute distress. She's scared, she's confused. It's exactly how Mrs. Nolan would have felt when confronted by people trying to calm her down but doing the exact opposite. And Mrs. Graham was then taken to hospital. Now, the reason all of that happened was because they weren't equipped, but also that particular nursing home, St. Basil's, Randwick, didn't deal with the aftermath particularly well, I don't think. They were investigated by the Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission, and they breached 36 out of the then 44 quality standards. And that was a good home. I think that's the bigger point here, right? That was an expensive home. Cooma, the Yolambi Lodge, where Mrs. Nolan was tasered, is by all metrics, by all accounts, one of the good ones.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds like the issue is perhaps not with individual homes, but with the system as a whole and a lack of resources, a lack of registered nurses who might be able to kind of better handle situations like Rachel Graham's and Claire Nolan's. So if that is the case, why is it that we're seeing this trend towards having fewer and less experienced staff in aged care homes, and where does that kind of slide begin?
The state of play for aged care at the moment, it goes all the way back to John Howard. It goes back to the rewriting of the legislation in 1997. The very next year, in 1998, there was another change made to that legislation which removed the requirement for registered nurses to be on site 24/7. And back in the old days, before Howard rewrote the entire legislation, there used to be a low care, aged care and high care. Low care was where most people went, and they were low care. There was a bunch of oldies. They needed a little bit of extra support, but they were mostly there for some care, and then they were doing entertainment, they're playing games, they're doing puzzles and all that kind of stuff, and it was a lovely work environment. As the sector has become increasingly under-resourced, the acuity, what they call acuity of residents, which is the care they need, the high level, the complex level of dementia support, of, you know, behavioural disturbances, that has increased exponentially and continues to do so. And what we've seen is this trend of costs cutting over time to ensure profits, particularly as the cost of delivering care got harder. And so they were trying to save money elsewhere, and we end up in this situation where you're getting increasingly, as we've seen, you know, the proportion of personal care workers went from 50% of all aged care direct care staff to 71.2%, while registered nurses fell from about 21% to about 15%, and enrolled nurses from 15% to 9%. So it's a complete inversion of quality and skill. And now we're left with this situation where the Labor Party's back in government. They're trying to do something to fix that. So we've got a new requirement coming in on July 1 for mandatory presence of registered nurses at all hours at every single aged care facility in the country. They know they won't meet that target on July 1, even though it's mandatory, because there aren't enough of them. They need another 862, according to their own modelling. But the requirement is there. And I think rightly the minister says, look, it's better to have the mandatory requirement start and us meet some of it than not try at all.
So we have a police force that's accused of using force in situations that should have been de-escalated, an aged care system that doesn't have enough experienced staff, and the fact that things like this happen in quote-unquote good homes, that's a sign that it's not just that some homes need to get better at doing what they do. It's systemic. The whole sector needs to be rethought. So to that, what kind of reform would help?
Yeah, it is absolutely systemic. There's no doubt about that. The registered nurse I spoke to, who's done this sector for so long now, Jane Newbound, she made the really important point, and it's been made to me before, that if you are getting care in a hospital, the hospital might get about $1,500 a day for your medical care. And that is all they have to do is give you the bed and provide the care. If you are an aged care resident, the most you can get is maybe $300 if you're lucky as a provider. And you have to provide all of their medical care, plus all of their food, all of their entertainment, their auxiliary supports. All of that has to be done for $300. So it's just an economic equation, right? You're not going to get, and there's this argument came up in the Royal Commission, why is aged care considered separate to health? Originally, it was philosophical because we didn't want people to think that it was this terrible hospital they had to go into. It was their home where they were going to go and live out their retirement. It was going to be happy and nice. But the reality now is that with home care in particular, which is a great outcome and a great policy, a lot of people who are able to are aging at home for longer with support. And so aged care homes, nursing homes, are becoming essentially two-speed things. They do dementia care, which is 80% of the population, or they do palliative care. They're not good at either of those things because they are two of possibly the most acute, deserving of resources, medical applications we have in this country. And aged care homes have been kind of left with them without the commensurate uplift and resources that is required to do those jobs properly. So give them money.
the solution is, in some ways obvious.
People always say that, right? Sometimes they're like, oh, but you know, people say you should give them more money, but actually no. I'm like, no, give them money. And look, to be fair, Labor has a long road of reform ahead of it, and they have every chance to stuff this up, right, like any government. But they've made a great start. They put the money in the budget for pay rises for aged care staff. Not everyone and not nearly enough, but it's a start. They've put money in there, particularly for the homes who can't quite afford it yet, for registered nurses, for that policy of mandatory coverage from July 1, and to help make the sector more viable as a whole, while also trying to put a line between what taxpayer money goes to homes and where it is spent. With those reforms, money is important as long as you can tie it to actual progress. And that's where I think we start. We begin the next chapter of this story.
Rick, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ruby.
From the Saturday paper comes The Food, a free weekly newsletter featuring curated recipes from some of the country's leading chefs, including Andrew McConnell, Otama Carey, David Moyle, and Karen Martini. Cook what they cook by subscribing today at thesaturdaypaper.com.au/newsletters.
Also in the news today, West Australian Premier Mark McGowan has resigned after over 6 years as the state's leader and will leave Parliament. McGowan won unprecedented support, with one poll during the COVID pandemic rating his public approval at 91%, a record for an Australian Premier. But McGowan's term was not without controversy, with the state's Supreme Court ruling that conditions children were detained in at the state's only youth detention centre were unlawful, and his government approving major new gas developments. And PwC Australia's new acting chief executive has stood down 9 more senior partners at the firm as the scandal over the company using confidential information about Australia's tax system deepens. Acting CEO Kristen Stubbins, who took over the post after the resignation of the previous CEO due to his knowledge of the affair, said, quote, "Specifically, I apologise to the community, to the Australian government for breaching your confidentiality." I'm Ruby Jones. This is 7am. See you tomorrow.